I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Mike Rohrkamper. Mike is the CEO of Goldstar Chili. And Mike, I've known you for a long time. When we first met, we actually worked together as CPAs. Now you're in the chili business. How did you arrive at Goldstar?
You know, I basically had four jobs in my career since college. Started out of school, international CPA firm. Got some great experience there. And from there, went to an entrepreneurial kind of thing where I started my own CPA firm. Did that for 10 years, and that was a great experience. From there, I went into the public company environment as CFO of a Cincinnati-based public company. From there, into Goldstar. So Goldstar, to me, the reason it was so attractive, I had worked with the owners of Goldstar as a CPA for many years, so I could pretty much hit the ground running with them. It's a company, that small to medium-sized company, that I just felt I could really get my arms around, utilize the experiences I'd had in other businesses.
You know, Mike, I'm not originally from Cincinnati. I'm actually from Huntington, West Virginia. And since I've been here for several years, the one thing that really strikes me is how much Cincinnatians love their chili. What is that all about?
Crystal, it's interesting. You know, it's a cultural thing in Cincinnati. Kids grow up with their parents and their families going to Cincinnati-style chili restaurants. And when people move away, the first stop they make when they come back is a chili restaurant. Their friends who live in other cities, they send the products to them. So I think it's just something that's built into the fabric of native Cincinnatians. But the second part of that is I really do believe Cincinnati chili has a craveability factor too. I think once you have eaten it a few times, it's just got a thing that you just have to continue to eat.
When you first arrived at Goldstar, what were some of the big challenges that you faced?
Well, my timing, Tom, wasn't great probably when I moved there. I started in May of 2008 when the recession hit. The primary challenges then were just helping our franchise community weather the storm.
And you mentioned franchises because even though it's quote-unquote Cincinnati chili, you've actually expanded in a fairly significant radius around Cincinnati.
Yeah, we're about a 150-mile radius. You know, we're in Maysville, Kentucky, and Somerset, Kentucky, and Southeast Indiana.
Russell,
Kentucky, and then Dayton, Ohio. We don't get too far away from the Cincinnati DMA folks that have had some introduction to our product.
Well, Mike, we're out of time today, but we'd like to continue the conversation tomorrow, and thank you for being our guest. Thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your trusted business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Mike Rohrkamper. Mike is the CEO of Goldstar Chili. Mike, I hear your jingle, the Goldstar Chili jingle, often. I can even right now as we speak hear it in my head. Let's talk about that, the way that Goldstar differentiates itself in this marketplace, including the jingle, some of your innovative products that you've come up with recently. How much time do you personally spend on that type of initiative?
We are primarily a marketing company, and we do spend a lot of time on those kinds of things. One thing people don't realize is all the quick service brands and the casual brands are our competition. We never want to get away from being a chili restaurant, because that differentiates us from all of the big brands who are not chili restaurants. And then our competition in the chili industry, we feel that we've done a lot with product and menu innovation and a lot with marketing innovation that I think has created some separation for us and some traction for us.
When you go into a Goldstar, there's more of a variety there than there used to be and then there is in most other chili parlors. Is that part of your innovation?
Absolutely, Tom. There's some basic rules that we look at when we look at new products. The products either have to be made with chili or they have to be very complementary to chili. For example, our milkshakes and our double-decker sandwiches, which we feel are certainly in line with a Cincinnati-style chili restaurant.
But just to be clear, your milkshakes don't have chili in them.
They do not. But boy, they're great with a three-way, Crystal.
Well, speaking of three-ways, Mike, what is your favorite thing? Are you a Coney kind of guy or a three-way guy?
Well, my intentions when I go to the restaurant are always to try some of our newer products, but 50% of the time I cave in and I go back to the old standby, a three-way and a cheese Coney, no onions.
Well, let's talk about where you see your goals here for Goldstar. You've been on the job now for how long?
3.5 years.
So where do you see the company going in, say, the next 3 to 5 years?
Number one, we're trying to strengthen our Cincinnati area market. So you'll probably see some relocations of a few stores in that market. We're looking at about a 150-mile radius of Cincinnati because we think in that radius people still understand our products.
But what about schools? I read that you've also been really making a push into schools in terms of nutritional ads.
We're trying to leverage all of our strengths in our business, and we have a commissary that's state-of-the-art that's about 50% capacity. We've launched a Gold Star manufacturing group where we're looking to do branded and private label institutional products for schools and a lot of other institutional-type users.
You probably didn't have to use your CPA background to figure out that you want to increase that capacity of the commissary.
Only when it comes to the sales side of it and how many dollars it might contribute.
What do you look for in franchisees, you know, potential franchisees?
Well, interesting. You know, it's a good franchisee market today because companies have downsized and there are a lot of mid-level to upper-level executives that don't want to get back into that game, you know, have the business acumen and the resources to, you know, be an entrepreneur and work for a brand like ours, which is a turnkey solution for them.
As a CEO of a relatively small business, although large small business, do you have any advice you'd like to either give to the folks in Columbus and Ohio or to our congressional leaders in Washington?
There are a lot of rules and regulations that are very outdated, from anything from cleaning products to how you have to vent your restaurants and hood systems and all that. I just think that fresh thoughts and fresh looks and fresh designs will go a long way to help small business.
Mike, thanks so much for being our guest, and thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your trusted business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Today we're going to talk about something that is a little more difficult to talk about, and that is how to deal with aging parents when it comes to financial issues. And I was reading a study recently that gave me a very shocking statistic that almost 95% of us have never had a conversation with our aging parents about money.
Well, certainly our children have had conversations with us about money, but that was asking for money. You're talking about family finances, and do the children understand the parents' finances in the first place?
And you know, as we all get older, our parents are getting older as well, and our whole society is living longer. So it's not going to be unusual to find that our parents are going to live much longer than what we and they may even thought. And so this whole idea about money, the idea of how much money they're going to need in retirement, I know we have several clients who have parents that their body's still going, but their mind, unfortunately, is giving a little. And there are just some signs and things that people need to be aware of.
That's correct. I think there's a substantial portion, I forget the percentage, but a substantial portion of people, once they reach age 80, start having some type of cognitive impairment. And one of the places that's going to show up is in how they handle their finances.
And I think that as our parents grew older, the whole conversation about money and talking about money with their children was just taboo. But it's critical that we need to initiate the conversation. And one suggestion that I think works well is that if your parents do not want to be open about their own financial situation, maybe one way to get them to start talking about that is to ask them for advice about your retirement. Ask them from their point of view what you need to do to save for your retirement. I know one specific situation, the father was very unwilling to share his own personal finances with his son, but once the son approached him for advice, all of a sudden these types of issues came out and he became much more open and talked about his personal financial situation.
And the important thing is to get a grasp of the finances before there's some type of issue, either physical or mental health issue, that prevents your parents from taking care of their own finances, so that when you do have to help them out, you'll have enough knowledge to know where to start.
There are some red flags that you should really be aware of. As you visit your parents, get a sense of how their household's being managed. You need to understand how much money they're getting from Social Security, from pensions, from other retirement plans. You need to see if they're opening their mail. I know one situation where the parent left the mail sitting there for 6 months. The child went home to visit. The electricity was just about to be turned off because the parent just wasn't dealing with the issue. So take a look at those kinds of situations as you visit to just be alert for signs.
And one way of doing that is, again, learn what their habits are now so that you'll be more easily able to recognize when those habits change, and that change may be because things have just gotten out of control.
And if your parents don't want to talk to you, maybe recommend that they hire someone, a financial planner or a CPA or someone that they trust that can help them get their house in order, get all their financial documents, their accounts, everything lined up so that when something does happen and they really do need help, at least those financial issues will be in order. Also, women live longer than men, and it's not uncommon in our parents' time frame that the woman was often left out of the money conversation. It's just important to point out that it is critical that women be informed of what's going on financially in the event of a husband's untimely death. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens. We give meaning to money. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. And today we're talking about a topic that we wrote about recently in our column in the Inquirer, and that's succession planning for a business. And Crystal, somebody wrote in and wondered when is the proper time to start their succession planning. And I guess our answer was it's never too early to start that. I think we've both had examples where unexpected events occurred that somebody had to have a succession plan and maybe didn't because of an untimely illness or death. Or even if you're just planning for a transition to the next generation, it's good to start early and have a plan.
It sure is. And certainly by planning the transition that will happen in the future, you can take actions and really improve many of the business processes that you are entering into today. So as you mentioned, you never know when someone will be sick, God forbid an untimely death. It's just very important to have that plan in place. And again, it's not a static plan. It's a process. It's something that evolves as your business grows and as you grow over time.
Yeah, one of the pieces to a business plan normally is that you develop processes so that if you're the founder and the CEO of a business, you can be replaced either by one or more people. And by having organized processes, it may make your life a lot easier before you get replaced because you'll have other people helping you out with some of your duties.
You mentioned these processes. The key here, Tom, in my mind at least, is to plan early. Even though it's never too early to start planning, certainly if you anticipate a transition event, you should start thinking about that at least 5 to 10 years before you want to exit the business.
And I think some of the big things you have to think about is, do you want to have your employees or your children succeed you in the business? Or do you want to sell the business when it's ready for you to leave the business? And part of that is, what's the value of the business?
Right. It's always a good idea to know what the value of your business is today so you can take steps and actions that will help enhance the value and grow the value over time. Another very important aspect that I think people need to be aware of is succession planning, transition planning, even though it's very personal, should really be vetted out through outside experts, people that you can surround yourself with to give you advice and help you think through the various alternative methods to transition your business. It can help save a lot of money, including tax money.
Well, many successful businesses that we work with have outside advisory boards. They aren't official boards of directors, but they're advisory boards, other business leaders that get to become knowledgeable about the business, and they can assist with the succession plan. They are more objective, usually, and they may also assist the new successors when they take over the business.
When you mention new successors, and that's a very key component because you need to identify early in the process who those star players are. And you really need to keep the emotion out of the conversation because if it's a family business, you may not have a child that's going to be the best new leader. Think about others in the organization that may be better suited to run the entity and leave the emotions at the table.
Yeah, and maybe it's a team of people that need complementary skill sets. You know, not everyone has to be good at sales. Not everyone has to be good at engineering. But whatever your business is, there's probably certain talents that are necessary for the leaders of the business to have.
And then think about what your role is. Maybe you just want to pack it up and move south. Maybe you want to actually stay engaged and involved in the business. Where do you see yourself as you go through the transition process?
And also, how do you want to be compensated for that role? You need to think that through as well.
And then once you have a succession plan, review it often. Things change. The economy changes. People change. Make sure that you take steps to continually review and update your succession plan as your business evolves. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens. We give meaning to money. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today our guest is Casey Barrich. Casey is the Vice President for Entrepreneurship for Triad and also the Director of E-Zone. And Casey, you've been there 10 years now, so I'm sure you've seen hundreds of entrepreneurs come across your doors for advice and help from E-Zone. What are some of the things you've seen entrepreneurs do that have really worked well?
You do have to think out your business. As opposed to the 30-page business plan, which can be just daunting for some people to write, I have a 10-slide PowerPoint. You ask folks, hey, could you put together 10 slides? They invariably say yes. And that tends to be the beginning of an outline or a discussion to find out, does the idea make sense? Does the business make sense? So I believe in taking some small steps early on versus inundating your mind with a 30-page business plan.
Well, and how many business plans have you seen and then a couple years later revisit the business? The plan didn't exactly work out. It's the people who can adjust to their plan that are really successful.
I do. In this business, it's often said that the original concept is never, never the one that goes to market eventually.
And it's just as you said. I mean, it's the people who have an idea, who are passionate about their idea, who can express their idea in their business and then get other people surrounding them that can fill in the holes.
Absolutely. Our region, we're really blessed with a number of organizations that provide a number of expertise, but as well as networking opportunities. You got to get out there and learn from other people and learn from their mistakes. And from a service provider standpoint, you guys will be happy to know a lot of people shy away from the financial side, and you have to have a good set of financials that make sense and they're tied to your business plan.
Well, Casey, what about money? Because it's all about cash flow, and if you don't have the money, you could have the best idea, have the greatest management skills, but if you don't have the cash necessary to launch your business, you aren't going to be successful. What do you see the most successful companies, the one who do get funding, why do they get it when others don't?
Most of our companies, and we tend to work with equity-backed companies, so they're out raising money from angel groups, state grants, and other type programs, tend to have a unique idea. If it's been done 100 times, it's hard to ask somebody to write a big check for something that's going to be done 101 times. They're looking for unique ideas that are solving a problem in the marketplace. That would probably be the most general thing I see for successful companies.
And presumably it's a big enough market that if the idea is successful, it'll make money?
Absolutely. Market size is very important. And when I mentioned the 10 slides, that's one of the slides you have to address. How large is your addressable market?
And then usually these folks want an exit strategy too, don't they?
They do. Let's just be really candid. Lifestyle companies are wonderful. They are huge drivers of our economy. But the reality is your basic lifestyle company is not what people are writing a check for because they want to get their cash out in the 3 to 5 to 7 year range.
Well, Casey, we're out of time today. But tomorrow when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about the opposite side of what we just discussed today. And that is some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen these entrepreneurs make. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your trusted business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Casey Barrich. Casey is the Vice President of Entrepreneurship for Triad, and he's the Director for the E-Zone. Casey, we talked a bit yesterday about the positive things, some of the successful pointers that you have for folks. Let's talk about some of the not-so-successful stories. What might you give people as an advice as far as mistakes they don't want to make?
If I was to think of the biggest mistake that people make in general and ones that have gotten in the way of what I thought were going to be successful companies, it's probably the entrepreneur themselves. They tend to be locked into their position. They think they know everything. They're not coachable. Entrepreneurs is contact sport, and so you have to listen to other people, get involved with people, take advice. Sometimes maybe the person who's writing the check wants you to zig when you want to zag. Well, do you want the check or not? That's probably the biggest mistake, the whole coachability issue.
Well, don't you think some of the personality traits that make you an entrepreneur, you know, you have to be a little bit stubborn, if that's a good word, to think that you can carry this thing out, whatever this idea is. So hard to have that and also sometimes listen to other people, which you need to do.
Maybe instead of stubborn, we'll use persevering.
That's probably a much better adjective.
Nicer word. Yes.
I was going to use the word passionate about your cause.
And you need that too. You also remember you're running a business and you have customers and you have investors and you have smart industry experts that you should be calling on. So at least listen to them. Try to factor in their advice. Don't become so locked in that you appear to be, we call it the world's smartest person syndrome.
I always tell business owners this, regardless of what stage of business they're in. You know, you can listen to people's advice, mix it up in your own mind, and then come up with a decision. It doesn't ever hurt to listen.
I think that's what really makes entrepreneurs unique when they have that ability.
Well, speaking of entrepreneurs, in this economy, a lot of people have been downsized. They lost their job. So all of a sudden, people might think that they want to start their own business. Maybe you can talk about some characteristics of entrepreneurs, because not everybody's cut out to run a business.
It is really difficult. You have to have this innumerable number of traits to be able to succeed. Sometimes I laugh and I'll ask folks, did you have a newspaper route when you were young? Those folks always tend to be pretty successful entrepreneurs.
Well, Casey, also, you have recently been elected as the new president for Greater Cincinnati Venture Association, and you have an event coming up here shortly. Maybe you can talk about that event and why you're passionate about the Venture Association.
Sure. The Venture Association is just what it says. It's an organization focused on bringing in new thought to our region in the venture funding arena. And for instance, our event, October 12th, we're having a panel of four entrepreneurs with an entrepreneur moderator, and they're going to talk about how they all raised money in these, what we're calling turbulent times of the last few years. They've all been successful, and we think they'll have some great stories to tell that entrepreneurs can listen to and learn from. You can make some early mistakes, especially when it comes to investors, some faux pas that will forever haunt you into the future.
And if folks want information about that, how can they find out more about the October 12th Venture Association?
They can go to our website at gcva.com or just
Google
Greater Cincinnati Venture Association and they'll find it. We're at the Taft Law Center right on Fountain Square and we start at 4:30 on the 12th.
Well, Casey, thank you for being our guest. You've been listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your trusted business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Kendra Ramirez. Kendra is the social media and mobile apps director at Ascendum. Kendra, I've known you for a few years, and the whole idea of social networking, using social applications, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, has just exploded during that time. How are businesses using these types of tools to really grow their market share?
Yeah, I'm so passionate about this topic. I get asked a lot, you know, usually it's a customer calling and saying, should I go do a Facebook page? I'm like, okay, well, what do you mean by do a Facebook page? You know, I usually try to back that up and say, let's actually learn about what are the business objectives and business challenges that you're having. Because several people out there would immediately just slap a Facebook page together for them, and that's where the conversation stops. I think you need to take a full approach and look at the total picture, like a holistic picture of the whole organization. Because a lot of times social media sets inside of marketing. It doesn't breathe through the whole organization.
So in other words, it's just one aspect of an overall bigger marketing plan.
Absolutely. It has to be. If you just stick it inside of marketing, it really can't fully bloom and really leverage everything from sales and recruiting and customer service and human resources and communications. It really needs to breathe throughout the organization.
Well, certainly it makes sense that you'd have to have a consistent message across all the different platforms. But now there's just so many different social media platforms by themselves. Are there some that are better than others, or does that depend upon your target audience?
Great question. And that's exactly my first response when someone says, should we do a Facebook page? Is who's the target audience? What is the clear business objective? And that's where the whole return on investment happens, right? A lot of companies are saying, you know, I need to be able to prove results. That's great. Let's start looking at the business applications and objectives and those key principles we want to make sure and include inside of some of these social media sites. You don't have to do them all, because if your target audience isn't there, it's kind of a waste of time.
Well, the good news is it's pretty easy to get on that social media, but maybe that's the bad news too if you don't do it right.
Correct. Absolutely. I see a lot of people starting a business page in a like Facebook profile on accident. They didn't know any better. And instead of actually designing a business page around what they're trying to actually accomplish, you know, so I've had clients recently, because we have been doing this for so long now, they're calling me and saying, all right, what can I turn off? What can I stop doing? Because I feel like we've just spread ourselves too thin and we're just not executing well on it. So what can we actually pull back?
How do you recommend a company who, maybe it's even a small company, because I do think the internet technology really levels the playing ground in a lot of respects, but how do you recommend a company get started in determining and defining how they can use social media as a part of their overall marketing strategy?
It doesn't really matter the size of the organization. It is clear objectives, clear target audience, and which tools will actually get them there. Sometimes it's social media, sometimes it's, you know, webinars and events and radio shows and, you know, those other activities. So you have to look again at that whole picture of what are they doing from a sales and marketing standpoint.
So I'm on Facebook.
Yes.
Tom's on Facebook, but not as often as I am. And I guess the other question I have as a business owner, our firm has our own Facebook mm-hmm. page and so forth, but I also have my own Facebook page personally. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem?
No, not at all. Not at all, right? You know, especially us, we're so, you know, extroverts. We enjoy sharing our lives. And it's just, you have to have a personal strategy on your personal page. Who do you want to accept as a friend? If you truly want to draw that line in the sand and say, you know what, this is strictly for family and friends. This is not going to be where I'm going to accept client invites. And just send a message back to them, hey, I've decided to use LinkedIn for my professional connections. And that's okay. But we need to draw the line in the sand, because I've had a lot of people come and like, I'm connected to clients and I don't want them to know what I'm doing on the weekend. And just having a strategy, either personally or from the business page, having a strategy, a very clear strategy.
Well, Kendra, we're out of time today, but I do want to continue the conversation tomorrow. Thank you for being our guest, and thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your trusted business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Kendra Ramirez. Kendra is our social media expert. She's also the social media and mobile apps director for Ascendum. And Kendra, you've been in this space for, what, 6 or 7 years? You kind of were the first person that I knew of, at least in this area, that really concentrated on social media and how to use it for business purposes. What are some of the successes you've seen businesses have with social media?
I've got clients anywhere between 8% and 22% increase in revenues that we can directly measure because of the activities and strategy that we had around using some social media tools along with some other tactics inside their organization. And some of the ones that come to mind for sure is a large national bank that I worked with. We worked in the commercial division of the bank. We did a LinkedIn session of how do they effectively use LinkedIn for warm connections. And one gentleman in his target audience that he was trying to have a meeting with was a COO of a bank. He had been trying for 6 months to meet with the COO. So in the session, because I always ask people to bring a couple of prospects that they'd like to, you know, be able to leverage and do some research on. And in the session, he realized that he knew someone that knew this guy. He just had never had a capability of finding that information. So I say, you know, LinkedIn's kind of like your Rolodex, but it's on steroids. And so he was able very quickly to make a call to his friend, say, hey, I see that you know the COO of this bank. I've been trying to do some commercial banking with him. You know, I'd really love the opportunity if you'd help me out. Well, of course, the gentleman helped him out. He landed that appointment within 4 weeks of our session. And then within another 4 weeks, they actually turned into a $4 million contract for them. And that's just one very, very small instance. You know, another one from a recruiter perspective, a client hired 40 people through using social media. They had 110 hires last year. 40 of them came through using social media, a variety of tools. And that actually saved the business over $100,000 versus job boards and versus outsourcing some of those positions.
So it really is a useful tool that businesses should, if they're not already considering, incorporating into their overall plan.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And it just, you know, always goes back to time and resources. You know, we're not able to execute on absolutely everything on our plate. So let's get to the things that we can execute on, but execute well on. I see a lot of companies, I, you know, go and look them up and do the research and I look at their blog and it hasn't been touched since April.
Well, it's also easy on platforms like LinkedIn. You may have 20 people in your organization that are on LinkedIn. How important is it to make sure that there's a consistent message out there about your company?
I do a kind of a social media audit, if you will. I go through and look at all the things of where their name resides and their brand resides. And looking through LinkedIn is a wonderful opportunity to brand the organization in an individual profile. Too many times it's written as a resume, and that's okay if you're a job seeker, but if you're in business development or recruiting, it really needs to be very clear marketing message. You can actually have the About Us section from your website in the LinkedIn profile and versus the actual skill set of the person that they're trying to accomplish in the role. You can can use SlideShare inside of LinkedIn and do a capabilities presentation as long as it's something that you feel comfortable in the public eye. So there's a wonderful, wonderful way to have that brand consistency and mapping that out for them so that all the employees can have that same talk. And then understanding that every site that they go to, they're getting and receiving that same message.
Kendra, let's talk about the not so successful stories that you might have. Some don't that
yes.
people should think about.
Yes. But yeah, some of the don'ts, you know, I've seen this time and time again where, say, a small business owner outsources their social media to someone and they throw it over the wall. It has to be. It's okay to outsource, but it has to be very collaborative. There better be meetings about the content. There was a restaurant in the, say, 100-mile radius of Cincinnati that had outsourced it. And unfortunately, the person posted, hey, buffet special on Tuesday. And people were showing up and there actually wasn't a buffet on Tuesdays at all. Right. So kind of blew up in their face.
Not good.
So making sure and having that true collaborative partnership with your consultant.
Kendra, we're out of time, but if people would like to have more information or find you, reach you, how can they do that?
Through my email at kendra.ramirez@ascendum.com or phone at 513-615-3907.
Thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your trusted business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Steve Phillips. Steve is president and founder of Purple Trout, LLC. And Steve, you were a guest of ours early on. I think you might have even introduced us to the term search engine optimization before we even knew what that was. But that's been your specialty for a number of years now, and it's got to be still a very evolving field. What is new in search engine optimization?
Well, the one thing is true that it constantly changes, and Google will keep everybody on their toes. But probably the two biggest things that have happened over the past year or so is, of course, now Yahoo has kind of gone away. The Bing search engine, which is Microsoft, is running Yahoo. So that kind of makes Bing a little bit more of a player. Everybody's chasing Google, but Google's still the big dog. And one of the things that Google has been trying to do is clean up the search results. So in February, they introduce, or surprised everyone, with the Panda update. And what the Panda update did is it penalized websites that were not using original, relevant, good content. So Google laid down the hammer and said, you guys have got to write some good content, articles, press releases, and it's got to be relevant to your site.
So why would they do that?
Because they were getting a bad vibe saying, hey, if I go to Google and I do a search on electrical repair, what's coming up is all these article websites. And people would write articles and they would submit them to article websites to get publicity for themselves. So these article websites and Wikipedia, they would always come up ranked number one, number two, number three. And it was just most of the content would be garbage. It would not be good content, but it would have the right number of keywords sprinkled into it to make that site rank high. So Google penalized those sites.
Well, let's talk about how social media plays into this whole scenario. I know I use Facebook, I use LinkedIn, as you do. How does that work with Google?
Yeah, that's even going to become bigger now because finally Google is going to start paying more attention to Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and using those types of websites as opportunities for people to find information and to find you. So if a company has a Facebook page, it's still not great until people can find you. So even on your Facebook page for your company, that page needs to be optimized for the targeted keywords so your Facebook page gets ranked higher in Google as well. All of these things happening, and you've got to pick your battles and figure out what you're going to target.
Well, speaking of picking your battles, with all this social media, I mean, people tell you should be on LinkedIn if you're a business. You should be on Facebook. You should be on YouTube. You should be on Twitter. You should write a blog on your own website. I mean, how do you ever find time to stick to your main business if you're doing all that?
Yeah, you can't. There's just seems like there's just way too much noise. And even for ourselves, we have to sit there and pick our battles and figure out, okay, where are we going to get our biggest bang for our buck? Is it the blog? Is it Facebook? And it kind of depends on business to business as to what you're going to do. But I swear, like almost every time I do one thing someplace or I focus more on Twitter, here comes the traffic. Or if I focus more on blogging, here comes the traffic.
I was just in Italy recently with my daughter on a school trip. And as I walked up and down the streets of Rome, I would see businesses that says, like us on Facebook. How does that help a business to be liked on Facebook?
Well, it kind of tends to give a little bit more credibility to that business. And then it gives, now the business has a captive audience. Because when you like me, or when you like the coffee shop, then anything that they put a post on Facebook is going to show up in your personal stream. So if they post a coupon or a sale, by golly, you're going to see it and you're going to run over and buy that cup of coffee or use that coupon.
Not going to be real useful because you're not going to be going to Rome too often.
Yeah.
That's right.
Nice try, Crystal.
Oh, well, we had a great time anyway. Well, Steve, we're out of time today. I do want to continue our conversation talking about search engine optimization in the cloud and other technical information and issues that people should be aware of. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens. We give meaning to money.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. And our guest today is Steve Phillips. Steve is the president and founder of Purple Trout LLC, which is a search engine optimization company, along with a lot of other things, Steve. And in this day and age, even small businesses can have a worldwide presence by using technology. Maybe you can share a few top things people should be aware of.
Sure. It's definitely a level playing field. And the mom and pop businesses of the world can literally take down the big gun. And some of the things that local businesses or mom and pop businesses can do is work on their website to make sure that their content is fresh and updated. They can write a blog that talks more about their services and that is helpful. And then on a local level, they can get an account with Google that's free and set up their Google Places. So that way, if someone searches for Cincinnati pizza, the pizza shop comes up in the Google search results, and here's the independent pizza place competing against the franchise.
And let's talk about your company, Purple Trout. You actually go in and you help organizations figure out how to coordinate all of these various initiatives to maximize their opportunities.
Right. Yeah. We look at how bad is it right now? You know, what are you doing correctly? And maybe what are some of the things that you've ignored? And then we set up a strategic plan on what areas are we going to make improvements on. And it's hard to predict, hey, if we do X, Y, and Z, you're going to get this amount of traffic and you're going to be ranked number one in Google. But we can set some expectations on, well, right now you're ranked number 88 in Google. That means nobody's finding you. So what do we need to do to get a ticket into the ballpark?
What are some of the most important things Google looks at when they're ranking these websites?
Recently, I read a book that says Google looks at 167 different things. And of course, nobody knows what they are. But the big thing that Google looks at is content. And let's say the three of us have a bakery and we sell all different types of pies and cookies and pastries. You're getting hungry. If we're going to try to get ranked higher on some of those keywords, we want to make sure that we use those keywords when we write our content. Now, we don't want to dumb down our audience and say, hey, do you like chocolate chip cookies? We love chocolate chip cookies. Let's buy chocolate chip cookies. But we want to be compelling enough to the human, then some of those things that you're trying to convey to the human customer are the same things that Google, the robot customer, is interested in. And then as we write blogs or articles or press releases, then what's going to happen naturally, we hope, is whether it's in social media or another person's blog, we're going to engage and get other people to write about our blog. Hey, come out and check out their website. They've got a cool white paper, or they got a cool download, or they have a free trial. So that's where link building comes in, is getting links on other websites and in other blogs pointing back to your website. And Google loves those.
So in other words, Tom and I write a column every week for the Inquirer. It's not good enough for us to write our own column and put it on our own website. But if you would put a link to our website on yours, that helps in the ranking.
That's correct. And so all the people that come to my website, you figure, well, how many of those are going to click through and come to your website? So a veterinarian would want to get links from pet food stores and, you know, those types of things, and the animal shelter. The higher the relevancy, it's also important.
But you have to play by the rules. And they're the Google rules, right?
That's right. Yeah, the Google rules, that's what matters. So if you're doing anything, they use the term like cowboys that wore the white hat and the black hat. And the black hat was bad. Well, you got to be a white hat. And Google spells out on their website, these are the rules. And if you don't abide by the rules, there are penalties that can be very severe. And now people wear both hats.
And where do you learn the rules?
Well, you just go to Google and you read their ethics, and you go to conferences and you talk to other SEO guys.
And you work with people like Purple Trout and others who can help you understand those rules to make sure you're taking advantage of those areas that you can.
Right, exactly.
Steve, thanks so much for that great advice and information and for being our guest. And
sure.
Thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens. We give meaning to money.